I think my kind of stories, and many stories of South African young people who start their businesses, where there's kind of low support and there's so much pressures to provide. I mean, you must remember, at home, I'm the first graduate to go to university. And there's much more expectation that my mother was, I mean, she's not employed. She's a domestic worker. She was running a shipping businesses, and my father passed away. So I had so much load in terms of, we call it black tax. So I have to take care in terms of the sibling, the home, and providing. And I took that moment, a risk, to start the business. So there was so much at stake.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to make the most impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Borelowitz. Throughout this season, we've heard various stories and strategies from leaders in the social sector about how they've set and achieved scale for their organizations. But what we haven't really covered is the determination to succeed at scaling when all the odds are stacked against you. Today, I have the pleasure of sharing a conversation with award-winning tech entrepreneur, Livoyo Rani. In 2004, Livoyo started selling refurbished computers from the back of his car to teachers in Khayelitsha, a township in South Africa. Townships in South Africa are areas that were designated under apartheid legislation to be occupied by non-white racial groups. With zero capital in the beginning, Livoyo was able to grow his company, Solulo Utholo Technologies, to 250 employees, 16 franchisees, and Livoyo being named as Schwab Social Entrepreneur of the Year in 2016. In this episode, we talk about scaling in informal economies, how Livoyo built and grew his business under extraordinarily tough conditions, and why data is so critical in decision making.
So teachers, which like where I started with, then from selling second-hand computers, they were buying these computers. They could not able to use the computers, but they didn't have a skill to use the computers. So then I decided to, with my brother and also the partner, to open the first internet cafe in Khayelitsha. It was 2006. And whilst we opened the internet cafe, we just realized that people are not coming in numbers to use the internet. And then we said, okay, let's train them. Just the basic skills, that's how to type. Because they come in with papers, they want us to write their CVs. And then we train them, then they can able to train in the store. And then we could see now there's a need to open a school where we just like train like a student. And then 2007, we started with the school. And then 2009, so it took us 5 years to get the model right. So the model was more on the access to the internet, the skilling to get them community skills so they can find employment. And then it was more an opportunity to bring these services in an area where there were no services. I mean, like before we came in, people are used to kind of traveling about 30K to access to the internet for the job. They used to go to town to get the skill now. So since now we bring these services closer to them. So we're creating one-stop center for the connectivity, for the printing, for the, I mean, training, and also repairs and maintenance, and also selling the hardware. So that how it started now. So we started with one store and then opened a branch. And then it changed now from just like selling, it becomes a social enterprise now, because many young people now start finding employment, start studying further, start their businesses. We open opportunity for other, I mean, staff members to have franchise opportunity with us. And then we also become an opportunity for many people that, I mean, they're using us as to access to many opportunities. So that's how we started, based on the opportunity and also based on the gap that we are seeing, that I mean, people were left behind around technology.
So it's quite some journey. You said that you started this business in Khayelitsha. And for most people listening to this podcast, I think they won't understand the context and what that means. So could you paint a picture for people who've never been?
Yeah.
Sort of what were the circumstances that you started this? This is not just a regular startup. These were tough conditions you were in.
No. I mean, like you were spot on right in the sense that Khayelitsha is the second biggest township after Soweto. It's got 1.5 million people staying in Khayelitsha. It's highly populated. It has, squatter camps, shacks, where people are living and staying in informal. It was meant by the system of the apartheid, the government of the apartheid, as a dormitory. So it was more like black will become a labor to Cape Town. So they go and sleep. So it was not designed as an area, so especially and systematic, it was not designed that the area it can grow. And it's been probably, it was established in 1983, it's almost 38 years, if I'm right now. Yeah, 38 years in existence now. So it becomes the biggest informal areas where 60% are unemployment. I mean, there's young people who are unemployed and there's high numbers of HIV, TB. I mean, there's so much social ills that you find in the area. But honestly, it's a space where there's so much opportunity around entrepreneurs. I mean, young people are coming up with innovative ideas. But when we started, it was kind of a space, I mean, that it was not conducive to start a business. Because of even more schools that were selling these computers and teachers, they would be broken. The computer would be stolen. Because of that time, they could not, I mean, relate and connect it. I mean, still some of the social problem, they are still there even today. It's still a problem. In fact, COVID has made it worse with the poverty because it's like everywhere you go now, there's shack. You're welcome with the shack and people are building shacks in an area where it's not in conducive enough now, and the poverty is kind of increasing, unemployment becomes like, and the gaps around inequality, it becomes wilder now. So it's kind of like space where it's difficult to establish a proper enterprise, but it's an opportunity space where many amazing enterprises come in through that space.
And so in this tough environment in 2004, how were you able to start your business? Are you from Khayelitsha yourself? Did you grow up there?
No. I come from the Eastern Cape in Queenstown, next to Mandela's village in Mthatha.
Okay.
It's like 200 kilometers. So I came to Cape Town to study because Cape Town has the best institutions in higher learning. So I was kind of coming here just to study. So where I come from a poverty I come from, so I can be able to be a provider at home. When I was came in. So, but when I arrived in 1996. So when I arrived in Khayelitsha, I mean, it was mostly squatter camps. I mean, it has evolved now. People are building their houses now. It's have changed now. So it was just informal. So I was staying in the squatter camps. I was kind of experiencing them. So I spent 2 years staying in Khayelitsha before I moved to a residence at the university. But that time, It was just like a struggling to access to the technology, access to facilities and access to a great opportunity. So for us, as we start, I mean, it was difficult. I mean, it took us some time because I was defaulting to pay the bond and the car that I was having since I was a teacher. And it put me in trouble to the extent that my name was blacklisted. So I could not even access to funding to fund the enterprise, the organization, because of ours. And defaulting. In fact, the bank wanted to repossess my house because I was kind of like defaulting in terms of the payment. So it was kind of a stage of start from nothing, no funding, no support, no mentorship. Even the trust that I was getting in from the customer in terms of teachers, they're not trusting me. They were kind of saying, I'm mad. How should I resign comfortable in my main position and start selling a second home? Even neighbors where I was staying, they were saying that no. You're not okay. I mean, there's no way that we think that we're going to survive selling refurbished computers in the boot of a car and think that we are going to make it now. So the condition, I mean, it was not so great. Now, I think one thing that was great, it was more my mother and my brother who were behind me and they were believing in the vision and they were giving me kind of like, say, I'll go out and make it happen now.
And where did the capital come from? That was from your family, essentially.
Yes, I mean, my brother, I mean, like that time, he was working at Exit Mobile fixing the repairs on computers and he went to the bank and asked for 10,000 rand to buy four computers.
Which is around That's around $500, I think, isn't it?
Could be $500. That's kind of like where we started. And we bought, I mean, these secondhand computers, four of them. It was the start of the businesses. But that, it probably within the next 3 months, but they were not selling for 3 months. So it was as if like the funding now. But I think what I've seen, I mean, after 4 months, I see one of the school in terms of primary where teachers coming together. So I encourage the teachers to form a stock for a saving club. So I'll group them in a group of six, and they will pay each 400, 400, 400. So it's with over 6 months, I'll deliver computers in the schools, and they use that saving club to buy computers for that. So it was the start of the siege of buying computers, but it was just like for us to survive until we able to, I mean, to get the first funding that we ever received. I mean, the first funding we received from UK, from TBN, Transformation Business Network.
As Lavoyo worked ingeniously to grow his venture, he met an investor who helped transform the trajectory of Cellulo.
So when we met Dr. Kim, we met through the warehouse. So warehouse is a kind of a Christian organization based in I think Claremont now. Through Craig and Colin, they kind of introduced us. I mean, they were coming in just to go and visit Kailish, and they happened to come to see our store. And they were interested in terms of the story. I mean, they said in terms of the vision that we have it. And then Dr. Kim was coming to South Africa, and it happens that the meeting was arranged for us to meet. I mean, it was my brother and myself to meet Dr. Kim. And it was the first time, you know, we know Dr. Kim, and then we just pitched the idea. He just like listened to us, and then he kind of like said that I'm willing to kind of risk because I believe in you, that you are going to be the next big thing if I believe in. And I think that's kind of a case that also many entrepreneurs, that they need that belief, that someone that believes in them, in their dreams, and opens up the opportunity. So I think that's kind of like for us, that was an enabler for us to start our expansion.
One of the things I've found in creating this podcast is that it's really difficult to find someone like yourself who is born, raised in the country, that they've built a business and been able to scale it. Why do you think that is?
So as a black person, I was not allowed to start a business. So for me, what I was allowed, it was for me to serve the master. So I was allowed to serve the white person through my labor. So it was not at all envisaged that black person can be the means of. That's why you see that in Africa, South Africa, we are more consumers, more than producers, because of the system was designed for us not to be. So it's still today, I mean, after 27 years of a democracy, that you don't have as many. I mean, for us, we become a pioneer. The challenge that we face when we grow in the businesses, it was to find a role model, to find someone have done it before, where we can go and ask in terms of how can you scale? How do you do it to find ways to deal with people, with, I mean, our processes, we structured. So for us, it was like a pioneering something that, and we make many mistakes, and it took us toll in terms of our life, in terms of like where we are. In fact, even with my brother, we used to be in Cape Town together, and we have to kind of like separated at some point with the business, because he has to go to Eastern Cape and take care. And then Onandi has to go to other parts because of the business was kind of scaling, was growing. And we're kind of doing by doing it. And thanks to many support, many mentors, I mean, UCT, GSP, Bertha Foundation, and others that came along and be part of this program. And I think more than anything, beyond the system and where we are now, I think it's more about, I mean, for me, I think what works is ability to absorb and learn and hungry and for more opportunities and have attitude, which, I mean, doesn't take the past and able not limiting myself and also being open up to more opportunities. And I think that's kind of how propel us to make sure that where we are now.
Wonderful. So could you paint the picture of where you are now, which is a long way from the back of your car selling computers?
Now, where we are now, we are in three provinces in South Africa, Eastern, Western, KZN. In the coast, we've got about 46 centers. in these, I mean, centers in the rural areas, in the township. We choose to be in the informal underserviced areas where the bulk of our people are, because people were saying to us, go to Gauteng, and said, no, we want to serve our people where there's no infrastructure now. So we bring about 45-seater computer center in front. It's a cafe, it's a business center, it's kind of like more like a retail. At the back, it's a training center where you find 25 computers are sitting in the back now. We employ about 250 staff members. Out of the 46 centers, 16 of them are franchise. And then 8 of them are owned by former staff, former students who are owning part of this franchise. We've trained about 60,000 young people, I mean, on the basic skills. They come for 6 months course with us, and they work now in a call center, retail space, government department, banking sector now. And 80% of the students that we have are women. And then 70% of our students are unemployed youth who just passed grade 12. They're really looking for finding employment. They're looking for doing something about their life. So that's kind of how we have scaled our businesses over these 17 years.
Incredible. So 46 centers and still growing with huge ambition.
You
mentioned one of the things you did was franchise and decide to franchise, and some of your staff have taken on those. What was the reasons for deciding to do that?
So we said there were two options for us to scale, is to have an equity partner, but we're not ready for that time in terms of the equity partner, and say, okay, the best thing that we could do is to franchise. And we make mistakes. We franchise before time. So we franchise so that you can fund expansion now. So we went to the funders and said to them, please fund the staff members as a start. I mean, fund these 3 staff members as a start and then give them 50%. We own 50%. We realized that the reason why we've done the franchise, it was to fund our expansion. It was like funding our expansion. But we realized that we made mistakes. So we never had the franchise agreement. We never, I mean, put the systems and processes, I mean, so clear from the franchise. And so we were not having foundation right. So that was one part. And two, it's difficult to run 2 entity or models. If you're running a franchise, it must be a franchise. Or if you're running your own store, you must be having your own centers. So to having dual, I mean, modeling that you have it, it's very, because where do you give your energy around? And we realized that if we have our own centers, same impact, we make much more higher margin that we're making from a franchise. So financially, it's much more incentive. And so franchise is not kind of something that we might consider at later stage once we build solid foundation now. Because I think where we also lastly, why we learn that scaling is very difficult. You cannot scale if you're not nailing it. So to not nailing and scaling it, you're scaling a problem. So you need to nail it in order to scale it.
That's a great quote. I think we'll take that one. you talked about franchising. I mean, there's so many lessons in there that are applicable to so many different things about getting it right first time, expectations with people, this insight you have about running a wholly owned or branching yourself as well as franchising. It's difficult. So picking your model and focus. So it sounds like a lot of learning. It was a few years after you started your first store that you decided to scale. And I do think that really does set you out from so many other business owners who are running one site. And obviously, you still have a big vision. But tell me, what do you think it was that really made you want to scale this?
So we saw a need of our services, because after we've trained customers, they were queuing in our stores, looking for access to the computers. So we didn't have enough computers. So we have to open a next branch where we have to accommodate as many demand, because that time the mobile was not something, was like people not accessing the mobile now. And we said, if you see this problem in Khayelitsha, or this challenge, it's the same challenge that you see in Tanzania, in Soweto, in Mlazi, even in Zimbabwe, or even in Kenya. Same problem of T-shirt divide, that people, they are not able to connect it. I mean, like, they don't have tools, they don't have skill, this connectivity is quite expensive, and government, big businesses, they are not at all interested in terms of the bottom of the pyramid in that regard now. They kind of assume people will find a way. And I think even with the time now with the COVID, that has been open now that there's a big need of digital transformation and no one is doing that enough. So we saw that as kind of a vision that we will be a leader in the space, that we're able to provide connectivity, we'll provide skill. And then now it's kind of changed now, not only skill now, employment opportunities and transformation opportunities now, because we evolve with the communities where we are.
So I think it's fair to say that you face challenges that entrepreneurs in other countries would not have faced. Could you share a little bit about some of the things that you've, really significant things you've had to overcome on this journey?
Yeah. So as we started in Khayelitsha, having our own center in Khayelitsha, and we always have a vision to build a three-star building, like a three kind of block of building in Khayelitsha.
Yeah.
So that we could make many young people to believe that they can succeed in the area which was not designed to succeed. So we've always been ambitious and always been a part of, like, we want to paint a different picture in this community. And it was, if we want to be a business that's going to grow and become globally in the community. One of the challenges that came in 2015, it was a robbery, biggest robbery that took place. 10 guys came in our office. I mean, there's no trading, just an office. Two came in the office where I was there. I was staying with the finance and they put me on the floor, put the gun on my face and they cocked the gun. They take the laptops, they take the phones and they kind of search the stuff next to me. They've taken the car keys. And then 8 of them came in at different offices and most are women working with us and they are still young women. And they were putting on the floor and traumatized. And they went through every offices, take all the computers, they put them in the bag, they walk and they put them in the car. And lucky my wife, she used to run the cafe next to me. She saw the commotion. So she came in, just find out what's happening. And then they managed to go out and they go out with the computers and then just go out now. And for me, it was, I was traumatic because it kind of cut to the core. In the sense that, I mean, I've been working in this community so hard to give so much in this community, to empower, to give back to community. But the criminals, they've kind of shattered all kind of what I'm kind of believing in that regard.
For those of us in the social sector, we know that it's already hard enough to cope with the internal challenges of scaling. In the case of Lavoyo, this mission was made even more challenging by external conditions and events. Lavoyo had to keep fighting for survival. Here's what Lavoyo wishes he knew when he started his journey that he'd like to pass on.
If I knew how important the data from the business, because I think it's something that I value so much now that it'd never be part of us. If I knew in terms of how we understand the customers, we understand the impact, we understand in terms of, like, for us, I mean, for making better decisions, not based on the instinct. If I had better way to have understanding in terms of the numbers and the data and also the trends and also the patterns, and probably I'll make better decision in terms of the businesses, because of it's only now that I appreciate that. If it was like, maybe if there was someone who was mentoring, who was guiding me, or if I was exposed and I went to school and learned around this thing, then probably I would be in different parts of the country.
Interesting. So data is just something that you've learned over time is just absolutely critical for decision making. Is there anything else you've learned along the way?
More than anything, I learned around leadership, that as entrepreneur, we've got so much responsibility that we have with the people that we have, with the customer that we take, with the stakeholder that we have it, and also how important now that entrepreneurs have been looked up to now, and how important now to realize that we're living in a space where there's chaos, there's uncertainty, there's pain. And also around leadership is about pain. And just like every time you lead, it's a part of the painful thing now. But it's more like to embrace that and understand, and understand that it's part of the package of leadership. So I learned that over time, we will be key to collaborators with all in order to bring the services. And our voice will be on the tables with the government from a policy where you say that how can they better service the poor? Because before, I used to knock on the doors of the government. I used to be angry with the government. I used to say, why they're not partnering with me, whereas I'm doing things that they're supposed to organize. I learned that, I mean, if I do what I do and I do it well, they will come because they will need me. And because I've been pushing in the right space with them now. So I've learned in terms of how the system changed, in terms of where are you? Are you agitator? Are you disruptor? Where are you in the system now? And I could realize in terms of where I am now, in terms of like the system and what is the legacy and what I want to see in the years to come.
When we decided to produce this podcast series, the first thing we did was to seek out entrepreneurs from the developing world who've scaled their social ventures in the country that they were born and raised. We found no more than a handful. Firstly, this shows how extraordinary Lavoyo's story is given the odds stacked against him. Secondly, it makes it clear the work that the whole social sector needs to do to encourage homegrown solutions rather than parachuting people in. While the current number of scaled ventures is small, and there is a lot of work to do, there are promising changes in many parts of the social sector. And I believe that in 5, 10, 20 years, we're going to have some new great stories of homegrown impact at scale. That's it from us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe or follow our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And while you're there, I'd appreciate it if you could rate us and give us a review. If you love Mission to Scale, I hope you recommend our show to a friend or colleague. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll catch you all in the next episode.